Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
On this episode of Entertainment Education, the podcast, the one with AI in the classroom. ChatGPT is not running this episode, but the roundtable of guests joining me sure are. Joining me are Tracy Shorley, college professor and vice president in her industry. Deborah Brandt, K-12 and college educator. Brittany Clark, college professor. Amanda Zaprinsky, college professor and PhD student. And Sarah Ivy Carson, returning adult college student. We all sit down and have a roundtable discussion in this episode on how AI has not only changed the classroom, but also the world. Join us as we delve into AI, but first, a message from the king of pop himself, Michael Jackson.
Help. Spanish. You're taking 12th grade calculus?
Yeah, I like math.
Ew, why?
Because it's the same in every country.
It's beautiful.
Entertainment Education, the podcast, an 8-part series where host Alan Babiarz Lyra will take you through the journey of how entertainment can educate and create social change.
Oh, yes, the past can hurt. But the way I see it, you can either run from it or learn from it.
Hey, this is Michael, and I'm here to tell you how much I love Entertainment Education, the podcast. Alan and his guests do a great job at keeping me on my toes, like I'm moonwalking around the stage. Enjoy this episode on AI in the classroom.
Welcome back to Entertainment Education, the podcast. Episode 4, we are halfway through this season. I cannot believe this summer is flying by. And at this midway point, I wanted to jump into a topic that we will probably be discussing for at least the next 10, maybe 15 years. AI in the classroom. Where it's going, where it's been, where it's coming from, what's good, what's bad, what have you tried, what have you not tried, all those things. And this time I brought on a panel of not only people who I get to luckily call my friends, and I say that every episode, all my guests are my friends, yes, but these are all dedicated professionals in their respective fields. All right, first, let me introduce to you, without further ado, Tracy Shorley, who is a professor of communication and vice president of MCI USA Marketing Engagement Agency. Welcome.
Hi, Alan. Nice to be here.
Thank you for coming. Yeah. Next, I have another good dear friend that I've known for many years, Deborah Brandt. She is going to bring us the K-12 perspective along with, because she is also a college professor. That's how we met. So she's going to bring us both perspectives from there. So welcome, Deborah.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. I appreciate it. Next, I want to welcome Amanda Zaprinsky. First of all, she is also a college professor. But secondly, we are both working on our PhDs together. And that's how this project originally came out, was from a PhD project, the Entertainment Education, the podcast. But Amanda is doing some really cool research, I know, on AI recently. And I'd like to talk about her perspective as both a student and a professor. So Amanda, welcome.
Great being here. Thanks.
Thank you. Next, I have Brittany Clark. Let me just throw this out there. She is also a professor in a college setting. Go figure, right? But you told me the last time that we chatted is you've been doing some trial and error research and kind of see what you can integrate into your classes, into your composition classes. So I'm excited to talk about that. So welcome, Brittany.
Thanks. Excited to talk.
And last but certainly not least, this person is a wonderful media communication major. So she is going to bring us the student perspective, but not only a student perspective, but, and I think this is important, but a returning adult student perspective to the classroom. So please welcome Sarah Ivy Carson.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. Well, I let's just jump in, don't you think? Tracy, I'll throw the first question out at you. So, do you use AI in your classroom and in your real life job at the marketing agency? We'll start there.
I don't use it a ton in my classroom itself. I will use it for myself to manage my classroom, but I don't use it as like a teaching style. I do like it for keeping myself on task and, like generating new lists of things or just better visuals for my students to just stay on track. But I don't use it from like a content perspective or really like a supplement. I use it more organizationally. But at my other life, my real job, I guess we'd say my real job, right? At MCI, I use it all day, every day, in every style and capacity.
Wow.
We're a very digital first company globally and domestically, and we take AI very seriously. Every single employee across the globe has to go through AI generative training and a commitment level of a course to learn about the basics of AI. We've got more advanced courses there, but I use it, I mean, honestly, like all day. I'm part of a team on our at our company called AI Champions, which sounds really fancy, but it really just means I don't know if I know what I'm doing, but I'm trying to know what I'm doing. I'm at least one of the super users at our company. But AI for me, from a work perspective, is a tremendous time saver. It allows me to automate tasks, to do things faster, so that I have time to think, to consult, to share information with clients, to manage my team differently. So we really, I use it for that. It's another part of my. It's part of my profession, right? Like, no offense to like Deborah, but like we talk about, do you know how to do math? Yes, of course I know how to do math. I still do it in Excel. That doesn't mean I'm not doing math. AI is just another level of that component from like a writing perspective, content, organization, et cetera. It doesn't mean you're not doing the work. It means you're doing the work differently, right? So yes, it's to me, it's very much the same. And we are insistent on its use every day. So.
So, do you think we need to integrate it a little bit more into our classrooms and teach those students those methods?
For sure, absolutely. One, they need to understand it ethically, right? Like when you are using it, when you're using it properly and appropriately. Second is, and I'm clear about this with my team, and I'm clear about this with, with my students when it comes up. If you could not do it yourself, you should not be using AI to make the generation. So don't say to AI, write me this strategic plan about this blah 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 activity or this organization and then present it to me and say, oh, look, Tracy, or look, Professor Shirley, like I did this beautiful strategic plan. Because if I had asked them to write it on their own, would they even know where to start? So they have to be able to utilize the prompting to improve their writing, to organize the document, whatever it is, but they can't just make it their work. So ethical usage, appropriate usage, and they have to know how to check it. It's not perfect. It's not perfect at all, especially when it comes to graphs, charts, features, math, projections. If they come in and like, or anybody, I mean, frankly, I did it. I looked at a report, I don't know, like a week or two ago, and I was like, oh, this looks good. And I was, they did not send it to my client, thankfully, but I looked through it and I was like, oh, this is not even close, right? Either the like naming was wrong, some of the figures were wrong. It used the same chart, the same data in like six charts in a row versus six different charts, right? Now, was it the prompt? Was it the tool? I don't know what happened to it, Alan, but like you can never just assume that it It's perfect, even just in basic writing. You have to go back, review and edit it, and take the time to do that. But let it do the dirty work, right? Like, let it do, here's my outline, generate this, do that, prompt it through, but don't cheat. Like, use your brain.
You know, between us friends and us friends listeners,
sure.
Here is my new favorite ChatGPT cheat. You know, we've all gotten those emails that we want to reply what we really want to reply to, right?
Yes.
I write out what I really want to reply. I take it and copy and paste it into ChatGPT and say, make this nicer.
Oh,
and it does.
I use it all the time. Yeah.
And then you just send the nice copy.
Oh, I use it all the time. Or I will do what I think is probably one of the best features of it. Please review my emails from 2 p.m. on Friday through 9 a.m. on Monday and prioritize my responses.
Are you serious?
Yes. Every Monday, I do it.
Dang. Please review we're going to have calendar. To talk offline.
Please review my calendar and my to-do list and create time blocks for me that fit my calendar between the hours of 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. Magic. Magic in it. That, for like an executive, that's mission critical. Like, writing aside, math aside, if you can help wrangle what I call my crime scene, not my calendar, my crime scene, if you can clean up my crime scene, I'm in. I'm in on all the things.
Deb, I'm going to turn to you for a moment. You are working with a generation of people, students who were just raised with technology in their hand.
Yep.
You teach math specifically, as opposed to a little differently, us on the comm side. How are you dealing with AI? How are they using AI? How has this changed your teaching methods in the classroom?
So, first of all, I think you all have had to suffer with this for longer than me. I think that the, you know, my biggest complaint, you know, and not when I first started at Marine, but let's say 10 years ago, was, you know, students using calculators. Okay, so they have a calculator. So now you kind of embrace it. This is when we use it. But so you sent this, put this out there in the, you know, internet question to us. And at the same time, I'm taking two classes this summer, you know, to give me a little bump. And one of them is about AI. And so I read two separate articles, and I guess in my mind in the beginning, so eighth grade math, you know, it's really structured days, right? 84 minutes, they come in, everything's kind of the same. And in my mind, Khan Academy and Dreambox and iReady, those daily things are not AI, but they are. Everything adjusts to each child. I could never do that 25 students and say, okay, now you work on this and you, so it does it for me. So as much as I want to say poo-poo to all that stuff, I do use it, and not even in my mind, not even thinking I'm using AI. And I know that Photo Math is out there. I know that Google Math is out there. I don't, up until like this year, in terms of trying to teach it, I've never used that stuff. I most problems I can figure out and solve myself. And I just started using, I literally had a hard time doing something. And a college kid that I know was like, did you try ChatGPT? And this is this past school year. And I was like, oh, I didn't even think about that. So I did. And it just helped me explain it better. I used it for, how can I explain this to these eighth graders better, right? And I also talk to them about using it. I tell them I know it's out there. I tell them when they come in and they're showing me their homework to check, and there's just an answer written down, I look at them and I kind of shrug my shoulders and say, okay, so did we use ChatGPT or Google Math? Because even I can't get the answer, and I've been doing this for 25 years, you know. And I joke with them about it, but, you know, I'm like, I'm okay with you using it if you're not sure how to get the answer. But for math, they have to have every single step. It's got to be every, well, I don't need the steps. Yes, you do. If I need the steps, you need the steps, right? I mean, I do teach honors math, and even those honors kids in that class, they will flat out tell me first thing in the morning, Miss Brandt, I struggled with this problem, so I looked it up on ChatGPT, but I need you to explain it to me better. And they would, other regular eighth grade students would not do that. But I mean, as much as I say I don't like it, I am trying to embrace it a little bit more. I'm going to put it out there, you know, all that I know it's there. I know that we're using it. I do struggle with the college kids using it because it's a little different. This is stuff that I'm teaching them that they should already know, because I am teaching the lower level math classes. And I kind of stand in front of the class and say, listen, you guys are doing homework, 25 questions in 20 minutes. I can't do it in 20 minutes. So there's no way you can, because you're in a lower level class. And they just look at me like I'm, you know, speaking another language, but I'm speaking the truth, you know. So I think the eighth graders know when to use it. The college kids are using it to get themselves through the class. They're not going to pass, but to get themselves through the homework. My biggest fear is these kids that are using it to get themselves through the class, they're going to graduate from college and have a degree and not know what the hell they're supposed to do with it, because they've used ChatGPT for everything. Right. I mean, unless you're going to be a nurse and you're hands-on, or you're in a hands-on environment, it kind of scares me a little tiny bit.
They have to have critical thinking skills, Deborah. Like, they have to.
I hesitate to use it a lot because I am super concerned about the environmental aspect of it. Every time we ask ChatGPT a question, it uses a bottle of water. Yes.
Interesting.
Yes. I mean, problem solve. I tell them, they're like, I don't like math. I said, if you don't like math, I'm teaching you how to solve problems. And that's what math is. You don't have to like the math part, but I still want to teach you how to solve the problem. But ethically, it does scare me a little bit with the water.
You know, you mentioned an important message that I think all instructors need to hear, is that
Tracy says she's taken these learning classes. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. No, you're fine. I was going to say, everybody's using it. That's even, you know,
yes,
I would say even we're using it.
And I have to be real and like embrace the AI part, because they're going to be using it. So I need to understand and grow with the industry. It's kind of like when computers came out. If you didn't pick up a computer and start using it, you were going to drown. I need to understand how it works. So I am going to embrace it. It's the critical thinking that I care about and the problem solving skills that I care about. And I honestly tell them, I don't care what the answer is. I really do. How did you get there is my question.
Amanda, I'm going to jump to you if you're ready. You know, I think you have a unique perspective because you have both experience in the classroom as a professor and in the classroom as a student. So do you think this has changed your use of AI in the classroom and in your studies?
Yes. I also realized I'm also a professional that does it too, because I do photography and I use AI all the time for my photography now, because it makes it so much easier.
I bet. So
I have dyslexia and I use Grammarly a lot, which is an AI program. It's on the lower scale of AI, but they've started incorporating AI into it to make it more advanced so that it actually edits my work to sound more professional right away. So I've been using it a lot more as a student because it actually is incorporated in those devices that I need for my learning disability. As a teacher though, so like multiple professionals, like Tracy also said how much they use it, I've been told that I need to incorporate, especially in like business communication and stuff, that they need to learn how to use the AI properly and the ethics behind it. And I know I'm one of the few teachers who allow AI completely in my classes, but I'm also, because I'm a communication instructor and they have to verbally explain everything. So even if they use another device like an AI to get the information, they're still retaining the information because they have to verbally explain it to me. So that's a way that I've learned how to adjust to it. I've also taught them how to cite AI into their papers and things like that. And I've also incorporated that into my own research as well. I was going to say, as a student, I especially for like thesis statements and titles and outlines, I used AI a lot for that. And like different ways to say, good job, because we have to respond to so many different discussion posts. I'm like, there's only so many ways I can say great job, and you need to work on this. So I use the AI to make it more creative. I type in what I wanted to say, and then I have it evolve it so that it's more professional, and it also is different from student to student or classmate to classmate, so that it's not just the same boring response every single time. And we also have, my university also has come up with like different levels to put in your syllabus of like no AI, sometimes AI, or full use of AI in your classroom. So little statements, that way students know which classes can and cannot use AI in. But I think educating the students is the biggest part here, because they need to know how to use it ethically, and they have to be able to use it without breaking the thing. It's a great tool for like studying, because I've made like podcasts for my notes within seconds so that I have something to listen to study for my qualification exam as a student. So I used Google Notebook and had my notes transferred into an instant podcast. But the problem is that if we keep going in that direction with the AI, it could eliminate jobs and things like that as well. So that's my worry about it.
Surprise for you guys. You guys don't get to hear this yet. But by the time that this episode comes out, I made AI do a introduction to this episode. So Michael Jackson will be introducing this episode and saying how much he loves Entertainment Education, the podcast, and is listening to this. So yeah, I'm excited to stitch that in there. Thank you so much, Amanda. That was such a great perspective. You know, you don't think of little things like Grammarly. Yes, even though it's helping us, that is an AI tool to help us, and that's how it was created. And when I think of when Grammarly was first evolved into the classroom, you know, that was another thing. Instructors hated Grammarly. Don't use Grammarly on your papers. And now it's, yep. Did you run it through Grammarly? Because if not, I don't want to read it kind of deal issues. Brittany, I'm going to turn to you for a little bit. You mentioned that you are trying to research and try to be successful on AI integration into your classroom to kind of combat the typical, hey, I'm going to copy and paste and turn this in, you know, what we don't want, right? So how is that coming along? What's your experience been? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Oh, I've just been devouring like every book and article AI in the classroom, because I mostly teach first year writing, and AI has been the bane of every first year writing professor's class since, what, 2023? And I know I actually have a lot of colleagues who are returning to pencil and paper exams and things like that in order to combat it, or doing like lockdown browser tests. And I really didn't want to do either of those things. I used to do pencil and paper everything. And then during the pandemic, I really switched away from that when we were all teaching online, right? And it's just such a burden to do everything with pencil and paper. It just is. So there are certain things that I definitely don't want my students to use AI for. I like what Deborah said about, I don't care about the answer. I care more about that you can show me the steps to know how to do this. And I have myself moved into a more process-oriented kind of writing pedagogy, where I do care less a little bit about the final product and more about the demonstration of growth over the course of the semester, right? There are certain things I definitely don't want my students to use AI for. I definitely don't want them to use it for reading, because I also teach literature, right? Because students just don't have the attention span they used to. It's just Even when I start from when I started teaching, which was only in 2016, right? But I definitely don't want them to use it to summarize the reading and just pass that off as I did the reading. Because even if it takes you a couple of hours to do a reading, that is time when your brain is sort of mulling over and grappling with the thing, even if you don't think you understand it, right? It's sort of subconsciously sitting in the back of your brain. So I definitely don't want them to use it for reading, even like, dare I say it, even spark notes and things like that make you do chapter by chapter breakdowns and sort of grapple with the texts in a way that just asking AI to do a summary for you doesn't do. I also don't want them to use AI for brainstorming, which is something that a lot of students actually tell me that that's the most common thing that they use it for. And the reason is that I'm more interested in their own authentic voice and their own authentic ideas and thoughts. And I read in an article somewhere, and I can't remember where, and I apologize for whoever said this, but once you read something, you can't unread it, right? And AI is built on collections of data that everyone else has produced, and it's a prediction machine, basically, right? It predicts the most common next word in the sentence. And so if you're using it for brainstorming, you're outsourcing your own ideas to what everyone else thinks on the topic, and you don't learn what you think is important or how you feel about a certain topic if you're using it that way. I have tried this semester, I'm teaching a summer class, to have them use it supplementing their brainstorming. So I did a big long discussion. I guess it wasn't long, but we did a discussion about different ways you can brainstorm ideas about a topic, and they get to choose their topics, which also helps minimize AI use, right? And then they had to brainstorm with a partner to see if they could come up with more ideas or to workshop their ideas. And only then did I have them use AI and ask AI to brainstorm for them and then compare and contrast what AI came up with versus what they came up with. But here's where I really struggle is that students think that AI is just better than them and smarter than them, right? Instead of using it as a fill in the gaps kind of thing, most of them told me, oh, I liked what AI came up with better than what I came up with because it was more specific. Right. And that's a huge problem, is students being too willing to outsource their thinking process in the writing process to AI because they think it's just better than them. Right. There's an old joke that I've seen a bunch of times on social media that we used to, as writing teachers, hate all the spelling mistakes and the grammar mistakes. And now we love seeing them because it means at least they didn't outsource to AI, right?
Yes.
And so that's where I really struggle, is that too many of them think that it's better than them because it's more grammatically correct and things. And I've toned down how much I grade things like grammar because I tell them I would much rather have your authentic ideas and voice than like pitch perfect grammar. The grammar is something we can fix, right? And that's where I tell them, you know, go ahead and use Grammarly, just don't use it to like restructure your sentences, right? Mm-hmm. Use it to tell you where to put commas and things like that. And I had a colleague of mine who used it in her American literature class, where in class they had read a poem that was, it was like a pro-labor poem, and it was inspired by a letter to the editor that the poet had read about factory working conditions in the early 20th century. And then she had asked them to ask AI to generate a similar poem and compare them. And too many of them were like awed by this AI poem, even if it was using like nonsensical allusions and metaphors and all of those things, right? And so it's a struggle. That said, there's a couple of places where I have used it successfully in my classroom. In my first year writing class, we work on a project all semester, right? They do a proposal on a topic, they write an annotated bibliography and a literature review before finally writing an argumentative paper. And letting them choose the topic is often enough to get them somewhat invested in not wanting to use AI. Mm-hmm. But one thing I've always struggled with is getting them to see potential weaknesses in their arguments or the way they're arguing. Even when I do a lecture about common types of weaknesses or things like that, and then have them brainstorm with a partner. Last semester, I added in an exercise where they then had to ask AI for gaps that they might be missing or things that they might be overlooking or potential weaknesses in their arguments. And then for homework, I had them come up with ways that they might address those weaknesses. And that was something that I did that was really successful. They really liked that. I really liked that sort of using it after the fact as a compliment instead of doing the thinking for you. And then in my literature class last spring, I did an assignment I really liked where their midterm paper was an AI analysis. And basically, I took the three books that we had read up to that point, and I asked AI to, I asked something specific to what we had discussed about those books in class. And then I gave the students my prompt to AI and the AI's response. And their job was to improve the answer that AI gave and not just to start from scratch with their own prompts. Right. Some of them just sort of did the baseline, right, where they were like, AI was good, but here's some specific examples that it missed. But some of them had really impressive and thoughtful answers. And I was really, really happy with how that turned out. And I would definitely do that assignment again. But as far as first year writing is concerned, as far as writing classes are concerned, I get too many students that, first of all, it's a class that everyone has to take, right? So they don't value the class. And I get too many students who think that they won't have to do writing in the future. So why am I being forced to do this, right? Which is a total falsehood. even engineers will tell you how much writing they have to do, right? But circling back to something Tracy said that I really liked, if you couldn't do it yourself, you shouldn't ask AI to do it, right? And I think I'm gonna use that in my classes now, right? If I'm teaching you how to do it so that later you can outsource it to the AI, but you have to know how to do it first, right?
Yeah, you know, one of the tricks that you talked about, I've actually used. Amanda mentioned that we were in the qualifying exams part of our PhD, and I've taken my sample answers and put it in and say, hey, does this answer this question? Are there gaps? You know, what am I missing? And it'll definitely give me a perspective that I'm like, oh, wow, you know what? I didn't talk about that. Maybe I should talk about this, or maybe I should look at this. So yeah, these are great examples of how we can use AI. And I really appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Sarah, I'm going to jump to you. For a student perspective, as a student and a returning student, how have you found AI to be helpful in your journey so far?
You know, there was a 20-year gap between my college experiences. And so coming back in was like a crash course in technology. And then everybody started talking about AI and ChatGPT. And I'm like, what is this? You know, I honestly was not aware. And I used it, but I will say maybe it's because of my age and how I did school before. I don't think I used it hardly at all for school purposes, like for class purposes. I did it more for like my radio shows or, you know, my internships, some stuff I did for them. But most of my professors said that were in agreement with AI as long as you, you know, used it properly. As long as you weren't, you know, you were making your own ideas, but I did not have one professor that was completely against it. And just listening to everybody, all of y'all talk about it, I've learned a ton more information because, like I said, I was kind of blind going into the whole, you know, AI thing. And I'm still learning to use it. And I forget that it's there half the time because, you know, we're older. We didn't have all that when we were growing up. We, you know, we played outside, we did different things. And so I think it was Deborah that said, if you didn't keep up with technology, you got lost. And it's the same way with, you know, AI. And so it's still, I'm still learning it a lot, but it is helpful. Like I said, as long as you make it your own, I found it, you know, beneficial. But like I said, I didn't really use it for school purposes as much as I did like creative purposes, like to kind of get a thought and, you know, make it my own from there, kind of get some ideas and, you know, put it into my own words.
So you mentioned you used it on your internships and other projects like that. Can you give us examples? Like, I know you're a media communication major, so were you using it on radio spots or TV spots, or, well, how are you using it?
At my internship, I did an internship with a radio station. And so they asked me to write stingers or little, you know, liners to go with the different holidays. And so I would get little ideas from ChatGPT of how they were wording certain things and certain creative things. Like there was some about Dracula for Halloween, and I would get the concept of it, but rewrite it in my own way. And, you know, just pull different ideas to do that. And then I also did it for my radio show. So say I would have like a topic for my radio show. And let's say one of the songs ended, the song that was ending, say I was just telling random facts for that show, the song that ended, whether it be the artist or something about the song, I would, you know, use ChatGPT and pull up information about, you know, facts about that song or the person or whatever it is I was looking for, and be able to just kind of take that brief summary and, you know, make it something for radio.
You know, maybe I will stitch in, I'm going to try to steal it from the radio station next time I'm there. But Sarah does my favorite PSA, and all you hear is Sarah going, "It's tornado season, y'all." In her cute little southern accent, it's hilarious. So I'll try to stitch that into this episode here. But thanks, I appreciate your perspective in there. For anybody who wants to jump in, because I know this is going to be a very, very loaded question, because none of us know what it's going to look like in the next hour. But does anybody want to take a stab of what the future of AI is going to look like, or what it may appear to be?
I was on a like discussion session thing earlier today, and someone in the chat said, I think AI will eliminate all the entry-level jobs. And I'm like very pro AI, but I was like, ooh, that's interesting, right? Like, is that really something that's possible? And my mom says it all the time, and I think she's just being old, frankly. And I'm like, that's not true. You know, like, that's not true. I think there's potential for AI to eliminate jobs, eliminate opportunities in the next 10 days, 10 months, 10 weeks, 10 years, right? If you don't embrace the skill set, if you don't embrace how to utilize the prompts, if you don't embrace investing in like true critical thinking or presentation skills or speaking or, you know, whatever. So I think we have to try and remember that this is still a piece of augmented information and it's presented in a different way. But even if I had AI write a proposal for me for a client, I still have to review it, feed it the content, organize it, and then present it to the client. There's still a human factor. So if I save time writing or editing a document, but I put more time into commentary, research, presentation skills, I think that's okay. So I don't know that it's going to eliminate things or replace things. I think it's just going to shift a little bit. And we're all kind of collectively a little scared of like what that looks like. But I think similar, I think that you said it about computers. Like I went to college without a computer. Like, and I'm fine. Too. Yeah. I mean, I had one a little bit later, but like I went with a word processor, you guys, like that. Like
me too.
That was a big deal. And I would not say that my word processing skills from 1994 or 1995 are the same as they are now. Right. So it's all about just like navigating the evolution of kind of what happened. So predictably, we're going to have a pretty smart workforce. They're going to be super agile. They're going to know how to use all the technology and tricks. Content will be consumable at a much smaller scale, right? At this universe of individuals being educated at the moment lives on TikTok, right? They want 25 second pieces of information, and that is going to change the way that we do things. So, you know, you're going to feed an article, 8,000 word journal and say like, make this into 25 seconds. Like that's efficient. like do what you want with it. Like, don't be a hater, like learn how to navigate it. So I don't know if that's a prediction, Alan, or not, but I think we just, if you're not paying attention, you're behind.
I was just going to say, one of the first times a student told me they got their news from TikTok, I cringed. But, it's not the same anymore. You can actually get credible sources available on TikTok now.
So absolutely. And I, yeah, same thing. Like, one, I do think that we have a community of like who people think that they're reporters, right? They go out and they're holding their phones and like taping things, and that makes me like twitch a little bit. I'm like, you're not a journalist. Put down your phone. Stop broadcasting crap. But that's just another way that they're consuming content, right? And we have to like adjust the language into thinking that that's the way it would be. But, we used to consume content by a newspaper delivered on the front porch of breaking news. And now we just wait. Then we waited for it to come up on that radio. And then we wait for the ding, ding, ding on the TV. And now because you stream everything or DVR or whatever you do, now you just wait for it to come in on your phone. And we still feel educated and informed.
Because I know like John McCarthy and a couple others that created the AI system said that it was going to be a learning thing. Like it's going to learn and it's going to grow and it's going to just be intelligent and grow over time. It's kind of creepy on how well it has learned because I was listening to my podcast and about theory, and someone pointed out to me, oh, they're taking breaths. I was like, how is an AI taking a breath? But you can hear them breathe in and breathe out while they're talking, which is an emulation of an actual human being. And it's an AI program because it was created by AI. And it's a little creepy on how much is already advanced in such a short period of time.
Going back to something Tracy said, spoiler alert, coming up in episode 6, we're going to talk about legacy media, newspapers, media, news, all that fun stuff, and how it is still applicable today. So thanks for that segue there, Tracy. Anybody else want to jump in on the AI train before we cut out and end our episode of the day?
Sure. Real quick, jumping kind of off of the legacy media thing, I'm curious about from purely an academic perspective, right? All of these copyright issues and how they're navigating that and how that's going to play out in terms of things like Facebook's Meta was trained on a lot of stolen data, right? So that's something I'm keeping an eye out for that I think is kind of interesting.
Yeah, that is something, we're seeing all these AI images coming out that aren't real and where, you can take celebrities' voices. Like I was saying earlier, Michael Jackson's going to introduce this episode. So you could take a celebrity voice and kind of do whatever you want with it almost. And where do we draw that line?
I was about to say to lead off of what Alan just said, you also can't, like, people are having a harder time recognizing which one's which, like, which one's the real person and which one's the A person. So if you have them introduce something, it's like, was that really him or her? Yeah, maybe not. You would never know.
No, I was just gonna say earlier, if you ask my husband about AI, he thinks it's gonna be like the Terminator. And, he is all doomsday. And me going back to school and learning all this stuff, I'm like, babe, everyone freaked out, when the computer came out, every new technology, every new something. But I think it will shape us as a society, but I don't see like Terminator level stuff happening. But I do think as a society, it will be kind of ingrained in us from, here on out.
At least we hope a no Terminator is
I
coming
think
up.
that,
yeah, let's hope not.
right. Yeah. Like early AI graphics were like Terminator looking like robots, and you'd be like, show me someone in a classroom, and it would be like this nine-fingered, like scallop, like monster looking thing. And now, like, you put something and you're like, show me people in a classroom with a cup of coffee and a yellow notebook, and it's like bing, and you're like, damn, those are people, right? Like they've worked very hard on like hands and fingers and reading things, and not being super judgmental or forceful on culture, right? We said, show me people using technology, and they would be all, Pan-Asian, and you're like, that's insane. Like what? Like it was very wrong, right? But now they're at least human beings. So there's And that was like a year ago. I remember making a graphic for our AI Champion Olympics, and it was all like monster robots. And I was like, oh God, this is so awful. And they had us like running, like shows. It was terrible. Better.
Well, I think if the
if the grade schools, you know, K-12, if you really embrace it, I see the eighth graders now, and I know we're all multitaskers, so don't get me wrong, as especially those of us that have multiple jobs, but these kids can truly be real great. I mean, just the multitasker of multitaskers. And I don't mean, we could say social media is like ruining them or whatever, but I think they're learning how to use it the right way, right? I mean, I am constantly in math saying, they always complain that they don't like the subject and they don't, and I said, or they don't want to make a mistake. And I will tell all parents this, we only learn when we make mistakes. Mm-hmm. No one is perfect. If you fall down, you get back up because you know you shouldn't do that. If you did this in any way in your life, you're going to learn. So I think that AI, these younger kids might be really learning, oh, there is a better way. Because even my honors math kids said, they told me straight out, I tried to use photo math and it gave me the wrong answer because AI isn't quite there with math yet. It, some of the stuff I look at it, I'm like, that is totally wrong. It's a good effort, but it's totally wrong. But they will come out and say, like, that's just crazy. I mean, we know it's going to be there. It'll be right eventually. But, you know, to come in and actually tell me, I wasn't sure how to do it. I made a mistake. I went to check my answer and then they made a bigger mistake, you know? So it's just that's interesting. Awesome. But I think they're not going to be the kids that are sitting on their phones at their job. They're going to be doing many things at once. I mean, we were talking, someone made a comment about time. Mm-hmm. And because of phones and internet, social media, we had a professional development at school and I have 84-minute classes, double block for math. And the statistics say that students are only actively paying attention to me in 12-minute increments.
Wow.
So at 12 minutes, I have to change what I'm doing because of AI, social media, TikTok, all those other things. So every 12 minutes, if I'm not shifting what I'm doing, getting off the smart board, making them stand up, maybe changing into groups, they're not processing anything after that. That's like a real, like, wow moment for me, for a person that watches a 2-hour movie and I can sit and watch it. Our kids can't, like, they don't want to. They're watching, I mean, ask them, they watch a movie and they're sitting there on their phone. They're not really watching the whole movie. So their process is just different in general.
That is eye-opening perspective, Deb, really. It gives me a little bit of hope for the future. Yet it's still scary. So first of all, thank you all for being with me today, all five of you. I appreciate the conversation. We are getting to about the end of the time of the episode. However, I like to have a little bit of fun at the end of every episode, and I'm going to hit you all with a rapid fire question that has something to do with AI. All right? So just give me the first thing that comes to your head. Okay. And I'm going to go Tracy, Deb, Sarah, Amanda, and then Brittany. No particular order. That's just the way they ended up on my spreadsheet here. All right. Tracy, yep. I need cool intro music here. Dun, dun, dun.
A good stinger.
Yeah. What is something that you hope AI never learns to do?
Tell my accurate weight.
Oh, that's a good one. I would agree. Please don't tell my accurate weight. Deb, would you rather have AI as your best friend or an AI arch nemesis?
Oh boy, it must be best friend.
Ooh, I would say, I have to say so as well. Sarah, if AI were your roommate, what annoying habit would it have?
Being right all the time and knowing everything.
Oh yes, good one. Amanda. If AI had a favorite emoji, what do you think it would be?
The laughing one, rolling on the floor laughing.
For the listeners, I just did the laughing emoji. You can't see me, but that's okay. Brittany, who would you rather have lunch with? Okay, here's two of my favorite AIs. Wall-E from Wall-E, Disney Pixar's Wall-E, or Samantha from the movie Her.
Oh, definitely Wall-E.
Yes.
Creative and curious. Definitely Wall-E.
Good answer. Good answer. Well, again, I thank you all for being with me today, my friends. I had a fantastic time with this conversation. I learned a lot. I hope the listeners can take back something with them. Again, still coming up. Next episode, we're going to talk about video games and how you can take video games into the classroom. Number 6 talks about legacy media, that fun newspaper news, everything that we used to do back in the 80s and 90s. And number 7 is about narratives, literature, and all those fun stories. And then we end the season with my favorite topic, Disney, as always. And as my friend Mickey Mouse says, we will see you real soon. Thanks, everybody. Okay.